Well, hello, all of you regenerative agriculture fans out there. Today, I'm talking with Sandy Eplett, founder of the Wild Body School, the East Tennessee Homestead Alliance, and weaver of a beautiful multi-generational lifestyle with her husband, children, and grandchildren. She talks about her journey from national-level pro athlete eating Hormel chili and TV dinners to where she is today, embracing heritage skills, cultivating community, and equipping the next generation in togetherness, clean living, working with family, and sharing the love. It's quite the tale. And what I loved about talking with her is her consistent use of sweet metaphorical phrases to paint a vivid picture of the life that she and her husband have made together intentionally with faith and family. This summer is all coming together into a momentous event in the first annual East Tennessee Homestead Alliance Festival, July 12th and 13th in Townsend, Tennessee. This lady has grit, grace, and gratitude. I'm Judith Farrell Horvath, shepherdess and owner of Fairhill Farm in Lancaster, Ohio. I share stories of struggle and success from regenerative ranchers, farmers, and adjacent entrepreneurs because I believe that an interconnected network of regenerative farms is key to living soils, resilient food supply chains, nutrient-dense food available locally. And it's up to us here today to ensure an earth that future generations deserve to inherit. If you like this podcast, please like, subscribe, or follow. It helps us to keep the content flowing and helps others to find us too. This episode is brought to you in part by FOOP, Organic Biosciences Plant Food, Cloning Gel, Liquid Nutrients, Inoculated Biochar, and Foliar Spray. All certified organic, living bundles of micronutrients, macronutrients, a spectrum of beneficial bacteria, microbes, and 11 strains of mycorrhizae. Listeners can enjoy a 10% discount at checkout when you use code REGEN. Visit thefoop, thefoop.com, and don't forget code REGEN, that's REGEN, at checkout. And now, enjoy the interview. Welcome, Sandy.
Hi, thank you, Judith. Appreciate you having me on the call today.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. Would you like to introduce yourself to the audience?
Sure. My name is Sandy Eplett. I am a very happily married woman of about 38 years. I have 5 grown children, 9 grandchildren. I am a personal trainer by trade and a garden designer as well. I'm also the founder of East Tennessee Homestead Alliance, where we are embracing heritage skills, cultivating community, and equipping the next generation. So I have a heart for teaching. It's probably my greatest passion, is to educate and teach others healthy living as well as sustainable living. I live in the South, Southeast. Actually, am I Southeast? I'm East. I am Southeast Tennessee. I had to think about that for a second.
Is it Midwest? I'm not sure.
I'm like, where do I live?
Yeah.
We enjoy living here, and yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Well, I'm really glad to have you. You caught my attention with your background in professional athletics, and then your story. So, would you like to give a little bit of background about where you started and how you ended up where you are now?
Sure. So I grew up in the area of South Florida where, you know, every weekend was at the beach. But that wasn't my life because I was an elite gymnast. So I started gymnastics very early. I was about 3 when my mom said, okay, I can't have her tumbling all over the furniture. We got to find a place for this kid to go. So she took me to a gym and that became my life. I started competing when I was 9 and moved through those competitions rather quickly, moved up the scale rather quickly. And by the time I was 14, I was what was considered an elite gymnast. So I was getting ready to go train down with Barry Caroli at his Olympic gymnastics facility and to begin training for potentially, you know, to be chosen for the 84 Olympics. Shortly, right after that, I was injured and was not able to go back into my sport at a competitive level. That was at 14. Fast forward a couple of years, I just could not get myself out of the gym, so I went to coaching. And I began coaching. I coached for a number of years, probably until I was, actually, I guess I was about 20. So about 4 years I've been co coaching, met my husband. We got married, moved out of state. And now you have to remember, I grew up as a gymnast in the gym. So I was there 4 days, or I was there 5 days a week, 4 hours a night. So I would go to school all day, take your homework to the gym, do it on the gym mat floor, work out until 9 o'clock at night, go home, repeat and repeat every day, meets on the weekend. So my life was really, that was all I ever did. I did, there weren't too many other sports outside of just an occasional recreational sport, because when you are at that level, you don't have the option to get hurt or injured or anything like that. So, but I actually did injure out at 14, and like I said, coached for a few years, met my husband. And when I met him, I was a kid who grew up on Hormel chili out of a can, TV dinners, single family household, was not interested in eating anything healthy, didn't even know about how to eat healthy. Met my husband, he was a former farmer. Grew up on a farm, 40-acre farm, knew, ate every vegetable under the sun. And one day he said, "Hey, what do you think about maybe cooking me some vegetables like broccoli or cauliflower?" And I was like, "You got to be kidding, right? Like, you really want me to cook that? I can't even stand to smell that stuff."
Oh
So
no.
I quickly learned that if I was going to have an amiable marriage, I was going to have to figure out how to cook some vegetables. Now, mind you, I didn't know how to cook anything. Okay. I was not domesticated. I just lived in the gym. So I wasn't taught all those things. Not that that's a bad thing. And you know, my mom worked two jobs, but it just wasn't where I was, right? So my husband knew how to sew, how to cook, how to clean, how to do it all, because that's how he grew up. So I quickly learned that if we were going to eat besides something out of a popped out can, I was going to have to learn how to cook. So my husband was like, "Well, I'll come in the kitchen and cook." And I'm like, "You will not come in this kitchen and cook. I'm going to do this thing." You know, a year later, I'm like, "Can you just kind of come back into the kitchen? We might all do better here, you know." So fast forward, we ended up moving to his hometown, numerous states away, to restore his parents, or actually would have been his childhood home. We went up there to be Bible students, thought we were going to only be there a year, ended up staying there 25 years. He restored his parents' home. Well, in the midst of that, I began to realize there was more to life than a gymnastics gym, and started to fall in love with this idea of maybe gardening, or getting your hands in the dirt. And I had actually kind of grown up a little bit in the summers. I'd go visit my aunt, and she lived on this mountain off grid, and she would teach me to forage for like usnea and things like that. But I had no idea what I was getting into. Like, it was just a fun thing to do with her as a kid, you know. So when I went and we lived with my husband's parents for 8 years while he was restoring their home, and they had a, this was the 40-acre farm. So he's back at that little home, and he's restoring that. Well, in that time, I mean, his mom still did a lot of these things. She still canned and sewed, and she lived through the Depression. So she taught me, you know, how to save your tinfoil, and how to save your, how to wash your Ziploc bags, you know, things that I would have never even considered. But it really instilled a love for me in nature and in gardening, and it really put me on a path of healthy eating, wanting to understand nutrition. I actually took a college course in nutrition, which was a joke compared to what real nutrition actually is. But I it don't even get me going there, right? But it was a great number of years where I really went to what I call my mother-in-law's school of dirt. Like, she taught me everything. And we just did it. I just did it right beside her, kind of like you used to do in the old days, you know, when your grandma would, you'd shell the beans, you know, you'd sit on the porch. This was way before social media. Heck, we didn't even have a computer. So it was such a, just a precious time in my life where I learned those types of things. And that really was a springboard for me to begin homesteading. We didn't call it that back then. It was just hey, you have a garden, you might have some animals, you know, that kind of thing. But we ended up having a very, very large garden. My husband was like very anti anything farming. Don't talk to me about it. I don't want to go down that road. He had a really troubled childhood. And then to have kind of the whole farming thing for him was more discipline at, than enjoyment, right? So when I started to talk about why I want a garden, he was like, nope, I'll give you $100. Go to the corner store, buy your tomatoes, buy your whatever you want to buy. We are not doing a garden thing. Well, it took me a while, but we ended up having a garden, and that just began to snowball. And we ended up having on that land that we had there, we didn't have any animals except for some ducks. We just had a massive garden that we, you know, ended up having five kids there. And that really took me from, I went from the gym to coaching to being a stay-at-home mom. I homeschooled all my kids. We homeschooled for 27 years. We did everything on our land. We had 67 acres and, you know, like I said, a huge garden. And that really, I think, cemented in me this desire to, I really went down a natural rabbit hole, if you will. I guess the term today is you're a crunchy mom. That's what they call them. So
Maybe, yeah.
I was like the OG of crunchy moms. Like I was back in the day where it was like we grew wheatgrass in the windowsill and I'd make my kids drink their wheatgrass before they had anything else in the day. You know, like I went way down this rabbit hole with it all. I loved that lifestyle. I began to incorporate it into everything I was doing. I was learning on the fly. Everything I did, I'm a big proponent of just try something new, whether it fails or not, you're always going to learn. I love to try new things. So I don't care about what flops or what doesn't flop. It doesn't deter me. I'm just like, oh, okay, it's another learning experience. You know, we'll move on. So we ended up doing the homesteading on our property there for probably a good 15 years by the time I actually got that garden in there. And then we moved here to the South. We're kind of what we call halfbacks. And because I grew up in Florida. So we moved to the South halfway back. And when we got to this, so we moved from 67 acres to it's about a 1.5 acre lot on the lake. And my husband's a builder. So we restored this little home that we have here. It was kind of a bulldozer type home. You know, you ever drive somewhere and you're like, who lives on that? Like, who lives there? Wow, if I could ever have a shack on the lake, boy, that'd be awesome. Well, be careful what you say.
Is that you?
Because we bought a shack on the lake. We sold an estate style home that we built in the north, and we literally bought a shack on the lake. It was so bad, Judith, that we didn't even tell our kids. Our kids were fairly grown. We had our youngest was 15. We didn't show them a picture of the house. We just showed them a picture of the lake. And we just kept saying, you're gonna love it. You're gonna love it, right? And we moved from an 8,000 square foot estate style home that had built with the goal of having a boys' home in the top space. It's a whole nother story. Ended up selling that, moved south, and like I said, didn't tell the kids. So they pulled up into this home and we were like a day behind them. We had a little trailer here on the property so they could sleep in. Well, they thought they were going to come into the house and sleep. Oh, no. It was so bad. Just to open the door, the smell was beyond anything. And they went into the trailer. Next morning, we got here and they were like, what were you thinking? You
My
just
goodness.
uprooted our lives, all of this to do what? We could write an entire book about our journey through restoring this home. My girls, so I've got two boys and three girls. My oldest was married at the time, so everyone came with us. And my two that were married were newly married. So we put them in the basement of this home in a walled off section with this tent like thing hanging from the ceiling so they could have their privacy.
Oh
And
no.
then we literally demolished the inside of this home. They stayed in the basement. The rest of us tried to stay in the camper, but there's like six of us in there, you know. So my girls were finally like, we're going to stick a twin size mattress, stick it on the basement floor, all the way at the other end of the basement, away from the other kids, while they would wake up in the morning with like glue in their hair and sawdust in their hair coming through the upstairs floor.
Filtering through the floorboards. Oh
Oh
my
yeah.
goodness.
It was quite the ordeal. We
Oh
had to zip
my.
tie our head in the bathroom just so we could take a shower. And I had put something up on Facebook, and my youngest was like, "Take that down. Take
Huh.
that down. Nobody needs to know that we're living like this."
That's so funny. Oh my goodness.
So that's where we've landed here, is in this little acre and a half. And since then, we've bought up pretty much all the land around us across the street. We're in a lake community. So when I say bought up the land, like we have maybe 4.5 acres, like, small lots that we've bought. All our kids live here except for one set that lives in North Carolina. But we've really began, our heart is about multi-generational living. So we've always lived together on big land. And when we moved here, we weren't really sure what that was going to look like because we only had an acre and a half, but everybody wanted to be together. So that's what we did. We all lived here in this house, and then we ended up buying a few pieces across the street. So my kids moved over there, and now we have, we've been here 8 years, and we have a little tiny homestead here, kind of in an urban area. It's urban, but out of the way. You know what I'm saying? So, we've got nice chicken coop. We've got bees. We have really big gardens. My kids across the street are starting all their gardens and chickens, and so it's really cool. Where I've come from being totally immersed in athletics, and then now to be almost, completely immersed in the homesteading environment. I mean, I've done this for a number of years, but it's really now not just something we do as a family. It's something I love to teach. I love being able to share heritage skills with this next generation. That's really my heart. I've always been a coach at heart. I've always been a teacher at heart. So that's kind of where we're at today. And then with all of that, it really springboarded me into, why is there nothing in East Tennessee? No big events, no ways in which all these people can come together and grow in this movement. I feel like, especially since COVID, people are kind of coming back to the land. And it really was a great opportunity to gather people in to do that. So that's where we're at today. That's what we're doing. I still do my, so in the midst of all this, I became a personal trainer, a certified sports nutritionist. I work with athletes, and I work with men and women, just creating longevity for them as well. And then through that, I've also opened up a whole garden design business, and now teaching all the heritage skills and those kind of things.
Wow, that's really interesting. It's almost like you went from purely physical fitness to body and mind and lifestyle health. Like it sounds adjacent, but it like the way you described it, it's actually a very big shift.
It really is. And I think even my audience was like, "Whoa, where are you going?" Everything was very body focused, very centric to, I mean, it was still about, eating healthy and growing your muscles, those kinds of things. And I still teach on that, but it has really broadened. And probably the majority of anything I do share about now is really about getting yourself back grounded to your land and grounded to, in your nutrition and the things that you need to learn for sustainability, right? Those weren't things I ever really talked about in the past. So I think it's all been a great segue. I think health is a large pie, if you will, and there's a lot of slices to that pie. And when we can find the one that resonates the most with us, that's where we are the most powerful in our speech, right? The ability to speak from strength and to speak from experience and those types of things. And I feel like after having been in my mother-in-law's school of dirt for all those years, I never thought I would actually ever teach it. I just wanted it for myself and my kids, teach my kids all these things. But then people just started asking, like, "Well, can you teach me to can, or can you teach me to sew, or can you teach me to butcher a chicken?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, why not?" So I ended up starting my Wild Body School. I kind of took what I was already doing with adventure fitness. I teach a lot of stand-up paddleboarding, things like that. But I took all that adventure and moved and kind of added in the influx of herbal medicine and gardening and ways in which to create longevity, even just outside of the gym.
Wow. Well, I was going to ask you about mentors, but it sounds like your mother-in-law was really a huge influence. I mean, did you have other mentors along the way? Is she still with you?
My mother-in-law is still with us. Yep.
Okay.
She's older. She's probably 86 or 87 now. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really do, you know, much of that anymore, obviously. Mm-hmm. I would say she was probably the biggest mentor in this respect in my life. My coaches, I think, were a huge mentor in my life as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Really moving forward in the passions that I had and becoming strong in those things. And honestly, my next greatest mentor is really my husband. He has been not only a mentor, but such an amazing partner to come alongside me. For somebody to have grown up in this farming community, working hard all the time, never seeing that as a joy, but as a painful point in his life, to be able to come alongside my dreams and my visions and the things that I want to do, I think is a testament to, number one, our marriage, and then who he is as an individual. So, and he's been somebody I can lean on as a mentor and as just a partner to make, just to see all of this happen and to be so synergistic together.
That's high praise, and it's really unusual to hear people speak of their spouse in such glowing terms after so many years. I mean, it is what it is. You sound very appreciative and very introspective, and obviously got a lot of gratitude, and that's really nice to hear. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you must have had some challenges along the way, huh? Besides the shack by the lake. Your husband being the builder, I mean, obviously he's equipped and knows people who can help out with that. But from a skills acquisition perspective, I read a meme the other day that said, be brave enough to suck at something new.
Yes.
And yeah. And it sounds like you have that mindset.
I
but
do.
You must have had some struggles in that learning. You want to talk
definitely.
About some
and
good
I,
ones?
Yeah. I think that mindset can come a little bit from when you're an elite athlete,
mm-hmm.
you got to have kind of that, I'm going to keep going. Every time I fall down, I'm just going to get up. Right. And so I think I've taken that kind of into everything I've pretty much done in life.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, you know, some of this, so are we talking like the struggles more around like the homesteading type stuff that, or.
I guess our listeners might be interested in any of them. I know that there's a lot of things that I hear from people regarding some things that you mentioned earlier, which was my husband's not on board or my kids aren't on board. There's not that everyone pulling in the same direction sort of situation mm-hmm. happening in their family, and that's a struggle. And then there's other people who talk about struggles just acquiring these skills, finding people, or just overcoming their own childhood predispositions and aversions or their preconceptions around things. I mean, you can feel mm-hmm. free to talk about any of them. Everyone's challenges are different.
Yeah. So I would have to say probably in the beginning, some of the mm-hmm. challenges were having my husband on board with that. And that really required from me to take a step back and ask myself, what's the most important thing here? This isn't just about me.
Mm-hmm.
This is about us walking together in harmony. And it's not that he didn't want to see me pursue things. But I think there was just an element of just some pain points there for him, you know?
Mm.
So being able to be patient enough through that, I think was huge. Moving my own ego out of the way. Like, what do you mean you're not going to support this? This is what I want to do. You know what I'm saying? I think I do find this a lot, especially in the homesteading arena, regenerative agriculture, when you've got one person that is just gung-ho and the other person is like, I'm not going here. I'm mm-hmm. not doing this. And my husband and I actually speak to this a little bit to other couples. We've done some marriage counseling. And I think one of the things that we kind of come back to a lot of times is it's really not about this dream. There's other little foxes in your garden that maybe need some addressing before we start talking about why the two of you are not on the same page going forward in this area. So oftentimes you'll see it's because oftentimes it's women, right, that want to have this homestead dream, but they need their husbands on board to help in that because it's really challenging to do that on your own
yeah.
and not get super tired, right? So it's desiring to, and you want to do things with your spouse, right? So you want to have that sense of camaraderie together. But there's not a lot of, I don't want to say there's not a lot. There's oftentimes a husband, or it could be the other way around, the wife that's just like, I just don't really like that. I just don't really want to do that. My husband to this day, when you come to the festival, he very well may get up on the stage and say, I don't do this because I like it. I do it because I love my wife. And that has been a mantra for us. My husband loves to race cars. I do not like to be in the race car. No, thank you, unless I'm driving. But I love to do it with him because it lights him up. I see that. So the challenge oftentimes isn't just, well, how do I do this homesteading thing? I can't get my spouse on board. It's time to like take a couple steps back and say, where did we miss out somewhere? There's a kink in the connection somewhere else that's kind of, when you kink a hose, what happens? Things kind of dribble and you're down at the other end of the garden. You're like, what is going on? There's no water coming out. And we want to sit there and fight with the nozzle instead of going back up the line and look to see where there might be a kink, right? And it could be 50 yards back, right? So I think that challenge in itself for me, I needed to wait and it was okay. It was painful because I wanted things when I wanted my things, right? I wanted my garden. I wanted my kids to learn all these things, right? It was very important to me. But I had to remember that my marriage was more important. Us walking in harmony was more important. I could still find joy in having a little kitchen window garden, right? I could still grow my wheatgrass out in the sunroom. I could still even have small little pots because it wasn't going to require him to do anything. So there's ways to overcome those challenges. They might not be the big grand dream idea right off the bat. But I think as you begin to find ways to pivot, you can then eventually potentially maybe have that dream. I mean, today I have chickens. Judith, my husband said to me forever, we will never have chickens. You have your garden, no animals. I don't want to be tied to an animal. He's very spontaneous, loves to travel. He was like, I want to be able to go places on the weekends, whatever, whatever. I'm like, babe, chickens are one of the easiest animals out of like the gateway, right? And we've got our kids all live around here. We're multi-generational. They can take care of them. Long story short, we got chickens. We got chickens, Judith, and he built me the most beautiful Taj Mahal of chicken coops ever. It is gorgeous.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So I feel like that can give hope to people. Like, instead of trying to die on this hill of, I want this thing and you're not supporting me. You're never going to catch that bee, right? You catch bees with honey. You're never going to catch that bee by smacking at it. What happens? That bee gets mad and is going to sting you. Trust me, we were out with my bees yesterday. I had one. I'm really good with my bees. They can be all buzzing around me. I don't even have to have a suit on. I can stand really still. I'm good. But I walked away a little too quickly. And one bee followed. And when he did, I'm really good about not swatting, but I did one of these numbers, he did not like that. And man, he was chasing me. So it just that metaphor of when you are facing some of those challenges, take a step back and ask yourself, number one, can I pivot? Number two, are my expectations for myself too big right now? Maybe not forever, right? I would have never been prepared for what I currently have now 20 years ago when I was asking for it. But I've spent time all these years learning, making my home, my classroom, my waiting room. What does Jess Soward say? Make your waiting room into your classroom.
I love those words.
I love that. And I've done that forever and ever. What we ha I think sometimes, honestly, Judith, I think sometimes the biggest challenge we all have is our ego. Our own ego gets in the way of what is it that I want to do? And we have to ask ourselves, and that's not a bad thing to say, what do I want to do? Where I think we run into a little bit of friction is when that the I squashes the we, you know, and especially if you're in a relationship that you want to maintain as healthy, you have to remember it's not just about what I want to do, it's about what we want to do. So I would say that was probably one of my biggest challenges then. But as we worked through and I created patience and we worked through some of those kinks in the armor, he began to say, okay, I can see that you're really loving this. This is doing well. You know, all right, let's expand a little bit. You know, then those types of things began to happen. I mean, we got bee or I mean bees last year, chickens 2 or 3 years ago. We just expanded our garden this year, so it was a much smaller garden. We just put in a huge we actually tilled up an area and did a garden on one side. And so I would say, like, when it comes to challenges, sit down and ask yourself, what is your challenge? I mean, for some people, it might be skill building. So there's a ton of places. I mean, YouTube, for example, you know, you can learn. I did not know how to chicken process. I didn't even know who to find out who around here did chicken processing. So I went to YouTube. I watched a bunch of YouTubes. I drew it out on paper. And then I was like, guess what? This rooster has attacked me one too many times. And I'm gonna practice on him. He's going into the freezer camp, and ended up processing that one rooster. And I was like, okay, that was not rocket science. We could do this. We ended up our second year with four roosters out of all the chicks we got. And I'm like, well, we're definitely not keeping four. I don't mind keeping one. But they all ended up being very aggressive. I'm like, okay, today we're processing four. Kids, let's go. Everyone's coming out. Of course, my kids are older. You know, we're going to get an assembly line going. So that challenge was met with education and the ability to say, I'm okay if I fail. I'm okay if I don't do it all the way correctly. I mean, the first rooster, I think we scalded him too long. So I
You
think he
cooked
ended
him.
up, yeah, I don't think he ended up making it. He just went into the trash or to the compost. But I think, you know, that would be some of the challenges that I find that I have. And I'm just kind of one of those people, like you said, I'm kind of like, it's figure outable. I can just figure this out. And it may not look the way I thought it was going to look, but I'm still moving forward. I'm still moving that needle forward in whatever it is that I'm trying to do.
Those are really good words of experiential wisdom, truly. I mean, I can tell from the way you describe it. Let's pivot for a second. You touched on something that has been sort of an idea that I've been playing around for years. And until my family entered the farming community, the idea of multi-generational family living was not something that was seen in my family. You don't see it in suburbia, really. It was not around in any of my extended family. But when we got our farm 11 years ago, we moved to our farm. We noticed that farm families, it's very common for them to have multi-generational living. And it's a different way of life. And it's interesting because the only thing holding us back at this point is, funding for additional housing to build on our farm. Our kids are 22 and 24, and they both say, with everything the way it is right now, we don't stand a chance of having our own home. I'm like, we've got land, we've got 19 acres. I mean, there's room here. And it changes the dialogue. And think that it's something that I'm seeing a lot more people exploring. I mean, in our valley, we live in a valley that's about a half a mile wide and 2 miles long. And there's a whole bunch of little farmettes and then some other houses in there. And over the past 10 years, I've seen probably a third of the properties add second and third homes on them in addition to. So this is definitely a trend that's picking up steam. It's definitely accelerating, and some of them are just rural homes. They're not necessarily farms, but then obviously farmers have been doing this for a long time. So can you talk to me a little bit about your ideas about multi-generational living and let's touch on that concept for a bit.
Sure. So I agree with you. I do think that it's something that has been lost in our society. You know, if you go to Europe, any other country, they're very multi-generational. That's very much a part of their whole culture, right? You know,
Yeah.
grandparents living in the same homes, and you don't have grandparents or whoever going to nursing homes, things like that, because they're all together. The grandparents are training the grandchildren, you know, all that. And that was really important to us. So my husband and I both came from, I came from a divorced background, one sister. My husband came from an abusive background, five kids. They did not live multi-generationally, even though they grew up on this farm. You know, all the kids, once they got married, they scattered and whatever. So when we got together, and it wasn't even like we said, we want to live multi-generationally. We just knew that we wanted to be the ones that had the most time with our kids. That's why we homeschooled. Whoever has your kids most wins. And we wanted to be able to be the ones that were influential in their lives, to be the most influential in their lives. And we wanted it to be that we did everything together. We, it didn't matter what it was. Like, we really didn't go and do a ton of stuff with other people. We really stayed close-knit with our kids, and we loved it, and they loved it. And we began to see this working very well in our lives. And at the time, we had a hope to have a boys' home. So our goal was to have this boys' home at the top of our, we had a four-story home, and they were gonna, we had like an apartment area up there. So it was going to continue to kind of grow into that same sense of multi-generational living. We moved, and all our kids came with us, and obviously we didn't end up having the boys' home. And they wanted to stay with us, which I think in order to have that multi-generational living, a couple things have to happen. Number one, either it has to be infused into your family when they're young, or number two, when they get older, if you have a healthy relationship with your children, a lot of times they want to come back to, you know, whatever it is you're doing, whether it's the family farm or living closer by, you know, because now they're going to have children, whatever. So I think we're starting to see some of that happening in our society. I think even especially since COVID happened, there's been a greater influx of families coming back together, wanting to live on the land together, things like that. And for us, it's multifaceted because we, so we all have our own homes, but because we're just across the street, you know, or next door, it's as if we're all together on one piece of land. We all work together. So we have working Sundays together where we're helping each other build our gardens, or, you know, we're getting ready to do a rain catchment system in the chicken area. So we'll all be together for that. My son decided to build his garden. So, you know, there's this element of really being able to bond together and work together. Like, you know, many hands make light work. So I think it's a beautiful way to bring back kind of that, for lack of better words, old-fashioned living, if you will, that we've kind of gotten away from. And I know that my, for my husband and I, that's a real heart for us, is equipping that next generation. How are you going to do that unless you are together, right? And our, for us, our main goal is our own kids. We've got five of them. And if they can go out and do the same thing for another five each, you know, like, that's multiplying the loaves and the fishes, right?
It is.
So that's real important to us, is to live in that. Now we have one, we have two kids. So one of our daughters married a young man over North Carolina. So she's just over the border, and they have a big family farm, and they live multi-generationally with his family.
Okay.
So that's great for us. You know, we love that. We'd love to have them over here, but they have a great family dynamic over there, and it's fantastic. And then my other daughter just got married, and we let her leave and cleave, but they're getting ready to come back here and build on our one of our lots. So I think, you know, this idea of multi-generational is nothing new. It's just that we've bought into this independent American lifestyle, and we've walked away from the solid foundational ways that our ancestors lived for years. Look how much more, you know, this is something I love to look at market trends and stuff like that. As a society, we are much more stressed than we ever were 100 years ago. We had different stressors back then, but we had community. We are so less community-minded. I think it's become more of a buzzword in the last few years, but it's starting to pick up some motion in that, which is a great thing because there's this hustle culture that so many have bought into. Me, 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 make it, make it, make it, money, money, money. And I was in it for a little while. And then when I realized this is not what I want, I don't want to be in this hustle culture. I want slow living. I'm still going to work hard. I can work circles around a lot of people, but I want to have a mindset of working in community with my people and slowing down, enjoying the process. Growing up the way I did, everything was goal oriented. You've got a meet coming up, you've got a competition coming up, you got to get to that. Doesn't matter what it takes to get there, that's your goal, right? So I lived a life of a very goal oriented person. I was always after a goal. And probably in the last 5, 6 years, I've really flipped that paradigm. Instead of I want to be successful, instead I want to be faithful. I want to be faithful to what God's put in my heart to do. He'll make it successful if I'm faithful. But I can be successful all day long and never be faithful to my husband, or never be faithful to my kids, or never be faithful to God,
No.
right? But if you're faithful, you're going to be successful at the things you put your hands to do. So I think when we live multi-generationally, we're dispensing that to our kids, to our grandchildren, like my grandkids. So some of my kids actually live in our basement now because they're getting ready to build. And I get my three grandkids on a daily basis. I got three across the street and three in the basement. And being able to speak into their lives on a daily basis, that to me is multi-generational.
It
They
is.
don't have to necessarily live right here, although we love that, but having that consistent influence day after day, where they and them being able to then serve their grandparents, we've lost that in this society. And I love that some people that we're actually getting back to it.
Nicely said. I couldn't agree more. I think that there's a lot to be said for European cultures and the family dynamic and the extended family, and how they have multi-generational living, that's true, but also houses built of materials that are there's a lot more permanence to them. And then families stay in specific areas for a longer time. We tend to kind of hop around different places around the country here in the United States, I think. And so you must be seeing this. You must be seeing the results in your relationship with your grandchildren from what you're saying. I mean, your kids want to be with you.
Oh,
They could be anywhere.
absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we were just talking about this, my husband and I, this morning. My one daughter, for Mother's Day, she said, I just want a day where my mom and I, me, can go out and just, we're going to go shopping. We're going to go get a massage. And I'm like, out of all the people you could ask for your day off from the kids or whatever, you're going to choose your mom, not one of your friends. And she's like, you're like my best friend. Besides my husband, you're my best friend. Yeah.
Oh, geez, that just pulls on my heartstrings so much.
Yeah. I
My
mean,
daughter. Oh my gosh. No, you go ahead.
well, you just sit back. We have family gatherings here a lot because there's a lot of kids, a lot of grandkids. So everyone converges on the lake house to have birthdays, whatever. My husband and I will sit back on the couch and we'll just look out at all the kids. All my kids get along. All my son-in-laws, daughter-in-laws get along. Everybody gets along with one another. The grand It's chaos, but it's a beautiful chaos. And we sit back and look and we're like, this is our legacy. Like, we are legacy builders here. And you know what, Judith? It wasn't easy. My kids didn't always get along when they were younger. My kids didn't always like us, right? We weren't their friends when they were younger. We were their parents. We're more like a friend to them now. We've earned that place of speaking wisdom into their lives. They come to us before they make huge decisions. Hey, mom and dad, what do you think about this? Doesn't mean that we lord anything over them or that they can't make a decision without us. But they value that we've got more time in the bucket. We got more pennies in the jar, and they see our life. They see the delayed gratification we've had for all of our lives and where that took us. And they're able to go, okay, we can do that too, right? So, and I think it's just because, people often ask us, oh my gosh, what did you guys do to have that? And I'm thinking, well, outside of the grace of God, I think it was just, we were the type of family that nothing was off the table to talk about. Nothing. Like our dinner conversations, if there would be like a little friend over, that little friend would go back with one of the kids and be like, I cannot believe you guys talk about that at the dinner table. They're like, I wouldn't even tell my mom those things, you know? And we're like, we told our kids, we want, if you have a question, bring it to the dinner table. We want it all here. We don't care how outlandish it sounds, how whatever, right? Nothing is off the table. And I think that's been a real key in our kids knowing they don't ever have to lie about something because we'll never make it hard for them to tell the truth. Never. They know that they can come to us with, Mom, that really hurt. Dad, that really hurt. Doesn't mean we always like it, you know, but we sit down and have a conversation. So I feel like we built, my husband grew up with rules without relationship.
Interesting.
Rules without relationship equal rebellion. That's what you're going to find, right? So from the background he came from, he, and of course, had no training in this, neither did I. We just wanted to make sure we did something different. And so it was important to us that even though we weren't perfect and we weren't going to do the things perfect, we wanted that relationship with our kids. They were the most important thing to us. And we had to eat a lot of humble pie sometimes, you know, with just not acting like we're the superiors or whatever. And I think that's why our kids ended up saying when we moved from the north, they were like, even our adult kids who are married, they're like, we're going with you. Like, awesome. It's what we want. We want to continue this legacy out. So that's what we've done. And we keep doing it. And we're still learning. You know, we still have our older kids coming to us like, Mom, could the way you just said that, you know, things like that, you know, I mean, it never changed, you know, it doesn't change, it just grows, you know. So, yeah.
That's beautiful. And I suppose you guys really have been finding the continuation of that bond and the deepening of it through the work that you're doing and producing your own food and these activities, right? That are
Oh,
so foundational to
absolutely.
health and
Yeah.
it all goes together. It's all woven together.
It truly is, Judith. Honestly, you know, we play together and we work together. We work really hard, but we play really hard too. Like we make it worth it to our kids, take them on vacations or not even that. I mean, we live on a lake now, so you know, we do stuff here. But I think it's so important. We're so disconnected oftentimes from our kids, even our adult kids. They go off, they have their own life. We get disconnected. But what I find connects us, probably one of the best, is working together. When you work together, you learn a ton about each other. You find ways in which to offer grace and ways in which to be like, all right, mom's just a little off today. It's going to be okay. We're all going to be fine, right? We live in a society where everybody's offended at everything, you know. When you start working together as a family, let me tell you, there's reasons to be offended. I mean, I don't know. When we talked the other day, you guys were out moving sheep fencing, right?
Yeah, we were moving sheep together.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing those things together. It doesn't mean that it's all great and unicorny. We got to do it, right? So we're going to do it and we're going to do it together. We're going to have a good time. My daughter and I hurt my sternum, so I can't, if I try to pull a hoe for anything, it really hurts. And so I was telling my daughter, I'm like, listen, we got to go hill up the potatoes. I can't pull the hoe. I'd love for you to pull the hoe. I'll do some other things, right? And that's what we do. We pivot together always. Guys, we're going to be gone for the weekend. Can y'all take care of the chickens, you know? It's a way to just live in harmony with one another and get outside of this. I'm just so anti-independent American because where has that taken us? Where has that taken us today?
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, I completely bought into that, and as I get older, I find myself reevaluating it. It's funny that you say that, and I don't know where it came from. I don't know who's benefiting from it, but it's I don't know that it serves us as a
Well,
society in the way that
exactly,
it
right?
did. You know,
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and you, when you look at where society is today, we've gotten away from agriculture. We've gotten away from regenerative anything.
Oh, yeah.
But I
So
mean,
extractive.
we're
Yeah.
so far removed from all that.
Yeah.
We're dealing with so many stressors that we would not have dealt with even 50 years ago, before the Industrial Revolution. Fathers were in the field with their sons. Moms were at home with their daughters, right? And it isn't about this whole, I guess there's some new thing out there called the trad wife or traditional wife, or I don't know. There's something out there, but
Yeah.
I just caught a glimpse of it. I'm not on social media a ton, but I caught this glimpse. I'm like, what are they talking about? I am not a trad wife. I'm not this. I'm like, okay, wait, stop. Why do we have to label it this? Why can't we just say we're together at home? And that's not to say you can't have an outside job. I mean, I have an outside job, but it's at in my home. But I mean, I'm not working with my kids in that, right? But this just this idea of, I just feel like it's been so ushered into the 20th century of go to college, get a job, become employable, get the big house, get the cars, get the this, and then you're in all this debt. You have no idea where your food comes from. You are working to pay the man. Just all of that for what? For independence? Where's that independence? Like, you don't even have time to go anywhere because you got to keep working to pay for your house or your car, right?
You're a wagee. You're dependent
Yeah.
on someone else. Yeah, absolutely. It's
Exactly.
not independence. It's perceived
Yes.
victory at someone else's, system of evaluation or ladder of accomplishment in life. It's
Yes. Yes. And again, I think it
social
goes back to the
currency of an unhelpful kind. Yeah.
exactly. And being able to, something my husband and I say all the time is, we desire freedom over luxury any day.
Yeah.
Freedom over luxury. And that doesn't, I mean, we don't live in a squatter's village, so I'm not saying we're giving up some of those luxuries, but if it's going to get in the way of our freedom or our peace or our family, it's a no-go for us. I don't care how enticing it is, it's still a no-go for us. And I think oftentimes I'm a victim of this. Like, I am all about the next best idea. Like, I am always like, ooh, that looks great. I think I'm gonna go do that, right? I'm a visionary at heart. And my husband is a visionary, but he's more of a steady. And so he'll be like, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the costs. Let's talk about where this is going to take us. He's really good at keeping me from doing this, all the time, back and forth like a pendulum. He's a really good gyroscope in that respect. And I think it's important to remember that, again, to get back to that, away from that hustle culture, and just back to that living together purposefully, intentionally, and in ways that are going to make us better humans,
Yeah. So what does your life look like from the perspective of being connected to where your food comes from? Like, how much do you do yourself, and what is that dynamic? What is the system that you guys have set up as an extended family, small community related, obviously, but what is that food production and collaborative working situation that you guys have set up? What does that look like from a regenerative and sustainable standpoint?
Yeah, well, I would say in that respect, I feel like we're major beginners. We've done the homesteading thing for years and years, but there was never really that sense of where's the food come from? How sustainable are we going to be? Like, those were never buzzwords for us that we really thought about. We wanted to do things in a healthy way, so that was always our platform, if you will. But I would have to say, just in the last 2 years, definitely in the last 2 years, maybe 3, we've become more in tune with our food and its sources. Prior to that, it was like, well, let's just make sure we eat organic, or let's just make sure, that we're not carboholics, or, let's make sure we're getting organic grains, and let's I mean, we mill our own grains, right? So if we want to talk about sustainability, we mill our own grains when we eat bread. We don't eat very much bread, but when we do, we will mill our own grains. And sometimes I am not opposed to going to Costco and getting the organic white flour if I'm in a pinch, right? So we do that. We raise our own chickens for eggs. We hopefully this year, well, not this year, next year, we're going to do meat chickens. We raise our own bees for our honey. So, but we, I feel like we are just now coming into the fullness of this. And I'm probably more of a driver for that than my husband would be. He's very laid back and he loves his certain things, you know, like I'm going to be like drop dead honest. He really doesn't like the taste of grass-fed beef. We have not found this is, I keep telling them, like, well, we need to grow our own, right? We have not found a farmer that we can get grass-fed beef from. When it comes into steaks, ground beef is fine, but when it comes into the steaks, he's like, it just does not taste good to him. So there's been this little like burr there, you know, in that little sense of like, he's like, no, I'm gonna go buy my conventional steaks somewhere and, you know, maybe at the butcher or whatever, you know, that might be better than like a Walmart steak or something like that. But so as far as like that regenerative, that sustainable, I just feel like we're still learning in a lot of that aspect, and we're still open for growth and open to learn even more of that. We don't live in an area where we could be, what's this word I'm looking for? Like if you had, you know, like your 19 acres, right? We don't have that kind of space to be regenerative in the sense of like a bunch of cover crops or, you know, those types of things. We try to do as much of that with our little gardening areas that we have. But, you know, and then as far as sustainability, like I am the kind of person like if I can make it from scratch, I do. We pretty much, I don't really, we don't really, we, there's no boxed or canned stuff except for what I can. So I can all my own food from the garden. And then if we need a surplus of things, you know, I'll go to the farmer's market and pick up more tomatoes or beans or whatever. So we can everything. I make my own bread, make my own mayonnaise, you know, all the condiments I try to make on my own. We try to stay away from seed oils. And so, but every year we're adding something new. I used to be someone who would overwhelm myself with like, I've got to do it all and I have to do it all now and I have to be fully sustainable. And I absolutely love to watch YouTubes of these people that are like 90% sustainable or whatever. I'm like, I aspire to that, but I am nowhere near that at all. Like, oh Lordy, you know, I mean, we have a ton of food stocked up. So if anything went south, we'd be fine for a while. But I certainly can't say like, I never go to the grocery store or, you know, because I do.
I think it's unreasonable to expect that people are able to achieve even at 90% sustainability without a very good network of mentors and other people to share with and a strong community, even beyond your own family. Like it really does take a village. It really does. Because different people have different skills and you can't. I can do anything. I just can't do everything, right? So,
Exactly. Although I often think I can do everything, and this is
yeah, just
where
give me enough time.
I'm gonna get it done.
But in reality, it's there's certain areas of strength, and you know, my weakness isn't going to become a tower of power. You know, just by doing it more, I might become okay at it. You know, we all have a bad day, a bad year when our peppers fail or when the peach trees get frozen. Like it happens. It just happens. Yeah. So one of the examples that I have is that I subscribe to a CSA, even though I have a 2,600 square foot garden and a whole bunch of, you know, perennial vegetables and asparagus and fruit trees and berries and all kinds of things. And we still subscribe to a CSA because the people that we have our CSA with, they grow stuff that I don't, and I fill in the details, you know. And then yes, we go to the grocery store. My husband wants that blue and orange box of Kraft mac and cheese, and you know it happens. And I go, oh, not for me. But you know, it's a real thing. I think it's scale though, across the nation. If more people did the sort of things that you and I are doing, I think if more people did that, our food system would be vastly different because everyone contributes. Everyone who is no longer buying in the grocery store, they're contributing their own. it's they're removing themselves from that burden of big ag and big food and grocery and everything. And everyone doing
Yeah.
that little bit, it does help. It really does help. Especially
It
if you share
does.
it
And
with
I,
others and teach them. Yeah,
well,
especially.
and see, that's the thing is what you've, people, I have so many people that say, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to read a label, right? On the back of a
Yeah.
box. And you teach them to read the labels and they're like, oh my gosh, it
I had to
says on
take
the
a
front.
class for that. Yes, me too.
Yeah.
Back in the day,
It
it was
says
one of
on.
the things I tell people. I had to take a class to learn how.
Yeah. And, you know,
Oh.
today marketing is such that they're getting really slick, you know,
Yes.
vegan, gluten-free, free range, right? All these buzzwords that people are like, oh, look, I'm eating healthy or I'm doing this. And it's not because they're ignorant, it's because they've bought into the marketing lie that we've been sold.
Yeah.
And they've done, you know, the three letter companies have done a great job of selling us on convenience foods that are, quote, healthy. And so I see part of the paradigm shift that we really are a part of now is being able to not spank people because they don't know, but to educate them and be like, listen, there's a better way. And I can help you transition from the grocery store aisles into whether it's a CSA, a farmer's market, or grow your own, right? And
Yeah.
I do have a lot of people that, because I do garden design, so I'll have people contact me and say, I really want a garden. I've never had a garden in my life. I have zero talent. I do not know what I'm doing at all. And that to me is like a beautiful canvas that I get to paint on and like fresh soil, fresh ground that I get to teach people. And so people are really eager. I think we are getting more influencers and social media content that's coming out now with helping people to understand where their food is coming from and where it's not coming from and what's being done to it and that kind of thing. Because I am getting more, you know, inboxes with like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. What do you think about this? You know, and of course, it's something I've been living for years and years. And in my mind, I'm like, oh wow, this is not common sense to some people.
It's
You
not.
know, like it's just not. And so I love that we have this place where you and I have that we can begin educating. Even if it's one-on-one, but even educating the masses on there are other options and they're not necessarily that more expensive.
A lot of times they're less expensive. Cooking from
Well,
scratch is much less expensive because when you're paying for the packaging and the processing and the convenience and the transportation. All that stuff's built in, and it's not good for you. And for what you're paying more for stuff that serves you less, and you're sacrificing your health for convenience. It's a
well,
terrible
and you're
trade-off,
good.
in my opinion.
Exactly. You're going to pay for your health in one way or the other. You either
Yeah,
pay it on the front
truly.
end or you pay it on the back end, right?
Yes.
I would rather pay
Yes.
it on the front end. And I want to have that money going to the front end of my health. So at 70 or whatever, I'm not walking around hunched over or sickness or whatever. I don't want that, you know? But that's, you have to invest in that account now to
Yes.
have dividends to pull from, you know?
Well said.
Yeah.
Indeed, that is true. And the other thing that I remind people is that when you buy groceries at the grocery store, you're using after-tax dollars. And it's expensive to buy food.
Yes.
And so if you're spending $1,000 a month, that's $12,000 a year at the grocery store, which is easy to do, by the way. You're
Yeah.
spending $1,000 a month at the grocery store for a decent sized family. That's $12,000 at the end of the year. Chances are you had to make $24,000 in order to pay
To
your
pay that.
to feed your family. What can you do with your time and
Exactly.
materials to provide $24,000 worth of time and food to your family? And look at the quality difference. So
Yes.
yeah, it's a big mind shift. It's a big mind shift. And people go, well, oh, I didn't think of it that way. I'm like, of course not.
Right. No, I love that
That's good for
analogy.
business.
I love that. I really do because people don't realize, well, hey, I have to go to the gro I have to do errands every once a week anyhow, so I'm already out. But you don't understand, like if you were growing that at home or making that at home, it's not even just about the food. It's about time spent at home. It's about not being in the hustle culture. It's about incorporating your children, grandchildren in it's so multifaceted and ripples down. Just it has like that butterfly effect,
It
you
does.
know. But if you're just going to the grocery store, grabbing your food in its prepackaged ways, bringing it home, putting it in the fridge, cook it up at night. We've missed the richness of what it is to be at home and cook your own food,
In the
right? It has,
process. And when you're not
yeah.
tied to that ingredient, because you didn't grow that carrot, you didn't gather that egg, you didn't honor that ingredient, and you weren't participating in the growing of it in the process.
Yes.
Kids especially, you don't
Yes.
connect in the same way. When you pull it out of you're driving your food like a rental when you're pulling it out of a box and throwing it in the microwave. But when you are cleaning up those carrots, the weird shaped beets, or the cracked tomatoes, whatever the case may be, you're participating in the process.
Yes.
You're learning
And
about your ingredients.
then being able to translate that to your kids when you open that apple and you show them inside and you talk about
Priceless.
the beauty of what's in there, how this works. I mean, and today what we have Instacart and whatever the other things that they have where you don't even go shopping for your groceries anymore. You get them online, somebody puts them in your trunk, you come home and you unload them in the fridge. The kids never even see that that there's even a grocery store. You know what I'm saying? Like we have just strayed so far. And I'm probably, killing a soapbox here, but yeah.
No, it's true. But I think a lot of people are waking up. I mean, Joel Salatin just wrote a book, Homestead Tsunami.
Yeah.
And I know that I've seen so many people wake up, but they don't know where to go. They don't know how to start. They want to do everything, and then they get frustrated and overwhelmed and burnt out. Exactly what you're
Yes.
talking about.
Yes.
And I mean, I don't know about you, but I tell people it's okay. You don't have to do everything all at once. Start small. Start small, and you're going to fall on your face, and that's okay. Have mentors, have friends, have a community. There's a lot of people here.
Yeah.
Not going to spank people. Like you said, you're here. I'm not going to give you a hard time for being here. You're here. Welcome.
Exactly,
You're
exactly.
seeing
And
this too.
oh, absolutely. And I think one of the biggest things that I'm able to really help people recognize is you, especially when you start reading comments on social media or something of something that maybe you said, and they're like, oh my gosh, I need to know, like I'm feeling so stressed about us. And I say, listen, listen, listen. You're going to pick 12 things and you're going to do one a month. 12 top things you need right now, whatever they might be, right? You're going to spread them out over this next year and you're going to just do, you're going to learn to bake bread this month. That's all you're going to do. Everything else is going to come. Next month, you're going to learn to maybe to cook one of your favorite meals from scratch, right? And then we're going to, what does it say when you take that penny and you compound it, right? Compounded pennies turn into millions later. If we're not careful, we get so overwhelmed that we quit.
Yes.
We don't want to quit. It's okay to fail. It's not okay to quit. Quitting and failing are two totally different things, right? So my students, I'll tell them all the time, they'll call me, they'll be like, I tried to make the mayonnaise that you showed us how to do and it was a failure. So throw it to your chickens and make some more, right? Don't quit. Don't go back to buying it just because you didn't perfect it that first time or even the second or third time. Heck, you don't want to come over and try to eat my sourdough bread yet. Some days it's great. Other days it's like hardtack. Okay. I literally have bread rising right now, and it is not sourdough because my sourdough I left in the fridge with the wrong topper on it and it's dehydrated. So now I got to go out there and figure out how to rehydrate it. And I'm like, yeah, well, guess what? Today we're having regular old yeasty bread, you know? So you have to, it doesn't matter how long you've been doing it, you're always going to have those hiccups and those things. And I just say, everything's figure outable. Just go with it. Go with it. You learn something, right? You learn how not to make mayonnaise that day. What did Edison say? Was it Edison?
Yeah. Oh, zip of the light bulb
Yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
I
He's
learned
like,
500 ways not to make a light
not to
bulb
make
or
a light
whatever.
bulb. He never quit. What if he would have quit? We maybe wouldn't have a light bulb today, right? So we just can't quit. We can fail all day long. We want to fail forward all day long. Because if you're not failing forward, you're just sitting on the couch. And nobody's got time for that, right?
Well
So
said.
yeah. So I think the beautiful thing is really being able to encourage people, just set those stackable goals, that, and then enjoy the process. This isn't about how fast can I get to having chickens or how fast can I get to perfecting a garden. It's not about that. It's about growing in that process because you're going to grow as a human through that the whole time. Because Lordy, there's challenges,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also important to have community in my mind. It's so important because you can't do it going alone.
I mean,
Yeah.
yeah, you
Come
can
on.
do it, but why? Why?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why put that kind of stress on yourself? And like you said, you buy from the CNA because there's certain things maybe you don't want to grow or you don't have space to grow or whatever, right? Same with me. I buy my raw milk from a dairy farmer. I'm trying to find the best beef farmer to get my beef from, because I don't have the ability to do this. I don't necessarily want a milk cow. That's going to strap me down probably more than I want. I'm okay with that. I don't have, there's this big thing out there like, well, you're not a homesteader unless, and then there's this list. I'm like, who gave you the right to define who we are as regenerative homesteaders, back to the landers, whatever, right? There's no definition on that. There shouldn't be. Okay, I'm not going to get on that soapbox, but anyhow, yeah.
So I imagine that this has been some of the impetus for you to put together the ETHA, the East Tennessee Homestead Alliance, and then you have a festival happening this summer. You want to talk about that for a second?
I would love to. Oh my gosh, it's my baby right now.
Yeah, I bet you're totally immersed in it.
Yeah,
Well, I'll let you tell the story because just reading about it on a regular basis, I'm overwhelmed as I can't even imagine doing this. So,
yeah,
yeah.
I'm definitely, we're getting closer. We're only like 60 something days out. So I feel like I'm in my last trimester of holding my baby. I'm very pregnant right now and I'm feeling the waddle. As a matter of fact, you and I talked a couple of days ago and I said I think I had been hacked, right? My Facebook got hacked. I think the event got hacked. Well, I went to sign in this morning to, I got a lot of work to do on that software program and it's telling me I don't exist. It says, you do not have an account. I'm like, oh no, that's just great. That's just great. Yeah. So now I can't even do anything with all my volunteers, my everything. So, all right, well, let's go back to what this really is, though, and not my my third trimester woes here. My husband and I had actually gone to, so this is another area where you're dragging those husbands along to things, I'm like, hey babe, I really want to go to this Homestead Festival. It's over, it's like only 3 hours from here. We could take the Sprinter van and just make a weekend of it, You got to learn how to frame these things sometimes. Let's just take a weekend. Let's go visit Nashville. Let's go all these things. We have a Sprinter van, so we've converted the inside. So we take it everywhere where we want to go and set up pretty much anywhere, right? So we go to this Homestead Festival. We volunteered for it. So because I'm like, I want to rub elbows with these people. I want to get to know them. I want to be right in the midst of it, right? So
Community.
we volunteered. Yeah, community. We volunteered. It was at Rory's. Out in Nashville, and oh my gosh, I was just in absolute hog heaven the whole weekend. And even my husband started to be like, wow, okay, listen to some of the speakers and hearing a whole different way of farming because he grew up on your traditional chemical farming, He was listening to some guy talk about soil and how bad Roundup is, and I have been like on him for so many years, like, please stop putting Roundup on the property, So he listened to all that. Anyhow, with that said, we came home from that weekend just fired up. And I said, gosh, I want to go to more of these. Let me go see where they are. Well, I knew Amy's is out in the Homesteaders of America out in Virginia. I knew they Doug and Stacy had one up in Missouri. And then there was this little tiny one that popped up that we went to again out near Nashville. And I'm like, there is nothing in East Tennessee. Why is there nothing in East Tennessee? We are like a hub in the Tri-Cities here. Like, this makes no sense to me.
Tennessee is big for homesteading too. The
Well, yeah,
knowledge right there in Appalachia. Oh my gosh.
and we live literally 15 minutes from a huge farming community. So I'm like, this is just really odd to me. So I kind of just put it like in the back of my mind, and I began to teach classes at this little place called the Tennessee Homestead Exchange. Give a little plug for these guys. They're a local. My friend Carissa Bittner, she opened a storefront in our little downtown area, and it's all homestead stuff. So you can come in, you can learn in there. She sells all kinds of milled products and stuff. I began to teach some workshops in her space, and that my classes were selling out. I was like, wow, there is really a need for this. So I then was approached by this other lady who said, hey, I have a 75-acre horse farm. It's right here in town. I would love for you to come out and I want to do some of this homesteading thing on it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, okay, that'd be great. So I go out, I meet her, I'm walking around and I'm like, oh, we could have a homestead festival here. Oh my gosh, would you be open to that? She's like, sure, would love it. So we ended up having like an first information. So, well, I went home from that weekend. I said to my husband, guess what? He's like, oh boy, when you come with guess what, I start backpedaling. And I said, so what do you think about having a homestead festival? And I told him a little about the space. And he's like, well, let's think about that. And I'm like, well, don't think too long because I already told her that, I think we're going to do it. And he was like, honey, don't ever change. Just don't ever change, So we ended up having our first, that was like in August of last year. January of this year, we had our first informal meet and greet, let people know about, because I was like, okay, now I need a name. Well, what am I going to name this thing? Oh no, I've just created an organization because we're going to have a homestead festival. So I got to have an organization. So I started kind of working backwards, right? And came up with the East Tennessee Homestead Alliance, had reached out to a couple of people that I consider on my private board, and came up with this name, came up with, really what is our thrust? What are we looking for? And so that's, embracing heritage skills, cultivating community, equipping the next generation. And I feel like in order to equip the next generation, you've got to embrace those skills. You've got to create that community so that we can then pour into that next generation, right? So that really
Three-legged stool
became,
for sure. You got to get all of them. So, all three of them. I love
So
the way
that
you
be
define them.
yeah, that became really our mantra. And so we had a really informal meeting. 120 people showed for this meeting. I mean, I was not expecting that. I thought we actually sold tickets just so that we could supply them with certain things. So it was like $20 a ticket. So I was like, if we get 20 people, I'll be really happy. Well, we had 120 people show up on that. And really, the people were like, because I even asked them, you guys are the ones out here. Is there anything like this? Am I just being redundant? I want to put this before you guys. You are the alliance out here. What do you see? Would you like to see this? And we had a bunch of small homestead organizations that were represented there. So we gave them the floor to kind of share a little about it. And it really opened up this idea of why are we not a network? Why are we just out here straggling, this group and this group? Why are we not connected in a central hub where everybody can go to one place and find these people, right? So that's kind of the ETHA kind of became that also that idea of a central hub where these extraneous organizations can plug into and get known. I want people going out to the other farms, meeting those farmers, meeting those regenerative agricultural permaculture people, and getting connected with them, right? So this organization is more about connecting the community together and then teaching that next generation to embrace all of this, right? So with that, I was like, I really want to have a homestead festival. I want to have a place that people don't have to drive 3 hours or 6 hours or 10 hours or whatever from this area, that we can come here. And I want to give these local people an opportunity to share their craft. I want these local organizations that why that's why if you go and look at our website, we have this local speaker series. We've got four or five, what we want to kind of call big names coming, from different areas. But we've got this local speaker series where these other people that maybe don't have this huge platform, but are so knowledgeable and they're right here, right? They can then begin to plug in and get known in this area. And for people to say, oh, I can go to that and learn whatever it is. I can go over here and learn foraging. So that's been really the goal of that. And so with that, with this particular farm that we were going to be on, after we got through our meeting, we realized, we're not going to have enough space here to do what we want to do. So we ended up having to move the location to where we currently are now, which is the Townsend Visitor Center in Townsend, Tennessee. It's a 40-acre, beautiful property right down in the valley, foothills of the Smokies. It's what they call the peaceful side of the Smokies. And we're working with an amazing venue there. And we will be there taking over that little area, the little area that we're going to have. The cool thing about this area is that we can grow and expand. And, this is our first year. So we might have, 500-ish people there. That's my hope. If we have more, that'd be great. And we're going to have over 30 different speakers, a little over 20 different demonstrations. You're going to be demonstrating, you're going to be speaking, and we'll have st over 60 vendors, food trucks. We'll have a kids zone. We're going to have live bluegrass music. It's really going to be not only fun, but really immersive. This is going to give an opportunity for people to step back from the computer screen and YouTube and come get in the room, if you will. Now, of course, we're not in a room, but come get in the tent. Come listen with your whole everything, right? This isn't just about, I'm just going to go watch a quick YouTube video. Because I've had some people say, well, I can just go get that on YouTube. Yeah, you can. You absolutely can. But that's not community. Community is coming together, learning who your farmers are, learning who your CSAs are, learning who has the special things that you've been going, oh my gosh, I didn't know this was out here, right? And being able to learn from those that have already gone ahead of you and have made the mistakes so that maybe your learning curve is a little bit less sharp. So that's going to be happening July 12th and 13th of this year. And like I said, it's the very first inaugural one. So we're pretty excited to be pioneering this in the area and really being able to lock arms with just all the people that are coming in. I'm so excited to meet. I mean, I haven't even met half of the speakers that are coming in. I'm just super. I'm a people person, so I love to be around all these people and just learning. Like I'm literally standing on the shoulders of these giants here, and I'm going to be probably one of the first ones, like taking notes and learning all the things. So yeah, we're just super excited about what we're going to be able to do here.
Well, I am certainly excited, and my husband's coming too. And this is going to be his first homesteading festival to attend. So,
What?
yeah, he's finally able to make one of these, and he's excited, and I'm pumped for this. And just the liner speak up just looks amazing. And I've never been to the Smoky Mountains, so we're going to be driving all the way from Ohio. So I think it's going to be a beautiful drive. It looks like a beautiful venue. The speaker lineup looks amazing from what I can see, and the other people that I've heard speak before. A lot of these people, I've heard their names, but except for a couple, I haven't actually heard them speak before. So it looks fresh. It looks new. I mean, it's good to have big names, but I also love hearing the other people too. And it's going to be really cool, I think. I'm really looking forward to it. To me, from the outside looking in, it looks. And the price was very reasonable, and just the consideration put into the planning and the variety of things to do. I'm really hoping it's going to be a good thing.
Me too. Me
Yeah,
too.
it looks
Yes.
great.
Thank you.
Yeah, you've done a great job with that, I'll tell you.
Thank
Especially
you.
with all the software problems and everything I know you've been experiencing. I feel
Oy
so bad for
vey.
you.
It's
Inaugural
okay.
year's
Remember,
hard.
everything's figure outable, right?
That's
I'm just going to be
right.
like, take a deep breath.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay. If it means I just got to check everybody in by hand when they come, well, let's hope that's
So
not going to
be it.
happen. But
So be it. Yeah. So, any parting words of advice for anyone who's looking to learn more about this community, jump in, or they need some encouragement, they're in it and they're feeling overwhelmed? I don't know. Anything? Personal thing?
I think just start.
Okay.
Just pick one thing. Really, I think paralysis by analysis is so prevalent. We want to analyze everything and understand it all before we do it. And I just tell people, just start. You can't just sit, watching videos and living vicariously through other people on YouTube, homesteaders or whatever. You have to pick something and just start. And fail forward every day. If you're not failing forward every day, you're doing nothing. And so I think it's just helping people to understand the paradigm shift around that idea of failure, because that's what keeps people stuck. They want to be perfect at it. Y'all, you don't. No one's perfect, not even Joel Salatin. You listen to him talk, and he's like, wow, if I could go back and do things different, this is what I would do. We're all going to have that, right? But if you don't just start, you're never going to have what you want to have, you know? So that's my biggest takeaway for people is be okay with failure and just get out there and do it.
Wise words from a lady who's done a lot of things. Very good, very good. So, how can people follow you and support your work?
All right. You can find me on Facebook at East Tennessee Homestead Alliance. You can also find me on my, you can friend me on Facebook at Sandy Eplett. I am on the web at wildbodyschool.com. That's where you can find all, everything that I do is going to be there. If you're looking just for festival information, you can go to East Tennessee Homestead Alliance.com. It will drop you into the Wild Body, but it'll drop you into the festival area. So those are areas. I am on Instagram, East Tennessee Homestead Alliance, and Wild Body School on Instagram as well. So that's where you can find me.
All right, Sandy. Well, it has been a real pleasure.
Yes, thank you so much, Judith, for having me on today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this has been really fun. And I'm looking forward to meeting you in person, not just seeing you over Zoom here. So,
Yes.
yeah, I can't wait. Only a couple more weeks.
Not long, not long. Yep.
Okay. Thanks so much. And good luck with the rest of your planning. I hope that your baby is comes out with
Yes.
high Apgar levels and
That's
good
right.
health.
Amen. Amen from your mouth to God's ear.
Amen. Okay, thanks.
All right. We'll see you next time.
It's gardening season. Throw away your Miracle-Gro. No need to buy 17 different products for growing all organic veggies this year. Try Foop. It's a revolutionary new plant food made with fish poop. It's Foop, but it's not even fair to call it plant food because it's so much more. It's in a category of its own. It's a spectrum of beneficial bacteria, 11 strains of mycorrhizae, fish manure, fish emulsion, seaweed, volcanic ash, which has azomite in it, minerals, and elements. Using Foop on your houseplants and garden is like a restock of all the micronutrients, macronutrients in the soil, plus a biological activity upgrade and repopulation at the same time. These products turn dirt into living soil. It's amazing. And they're certified organic. Comes in foliar spray, liquid cloning gel, and now an inoculated biochar, which is a total game changer if you ask me. Visit thefoop.com. That's www.thefoop.com and use code REGEN at checkout for 10% off your entire order. That's code REGEN.